We've got one more speaker this evening. In preparing for Eclipse Expeditions, a lot of things factor into it, not only to where and when is the eclipse and which country is it going to cross and how do I get there and how much money is in my bank account. There's one big question on everybody's lips. What does Anderson say about the weather? Jay has been a lifelong amateur astronomer. He's a professional meteorologist with Environment Canada. In 1979, he published, I think, his first major paper on eclipse meteorology. And shortly after that, he became a contributor to the U.S. Naval Observatory's Solar Eclipse Circular Series. When that terminated in the early 1990s, and I became the inheritor of the job of producing eclipse bulletins, I invited Jay to cooperate with me, and I'm delighted that he joined me to become partner on generating future eclipse bulletins. His contribution is read by everybody around the world, and nobody knows eclipse weather like Jay. Jay Anderson.
Thank you, Fred. I might add that it's been a real pleasure working with Fred. When I was sort of thinking of, well, when the USNO went out, that maybe I'd put out an eclipse circular, and what was I going to do for the track? And then Fred sent me a note and said, how would you like to do this together? And we totally ignore each other for a year and a half, and then work furiously to try and get something out in time, and we're always late, but we're almost ready with the next one. Anyway, eclipse weather. This is supposed to be a lovely video of the shadow of the moon going across, but for one reason or another, this video doesn't particularly work. But it's quite lovely, and if anybody wants a picture of, see what I mean by, if anybody ever wants a picture of that, or the track, or the little movie, let you know. Let me know, and I'll get it for you. Here are the five eclipses that I want to look at, and because the 2005 annular is fairly close to this area, I threw that in and didn't concentrate just on total eclipses. And I'm going to jump right into April 2005, the next one coming up. This is a cloud cover map with a color scheme in it, looking much more anemic on the screen than it does on my computer, but nevertheless, there are certain areas which are very favorable. A little red dot marks the approximate location of Pitcairn Island, which is one of the areas where the eclipse shipboard expeditions will be headed, and the other, the yellow arrow, represents a track that leaves the Galapagos Islands and sails straight to the west. And you will notice that the cloud cover prospects, based on the color scheme you see there, are much better to the west of the Galapagos Islands. In fact, we're into the light green shades here, which show a mean cloud cover amount of 30 to 40%. Down in Pitcairn Island area, we're losing about 15-20% of that. And there are other differences too. The cloud structure west of the Galapagos tends to be much smaller features, which are easier to avoid on a ship. But this is an eclipse track where you can't sail across the track to try and find a sunny spot. It's 20 kilometers wide or less. You have to sail up and down the track. So that means that if you're going to chase an opening in the cloud, you have to have a ship's captain with enough time and a ship that's willing to move. Here is a little video of the two areas. You can see the Galapagos Islands there on this map, but the red dot marks the Pitcairn Island area. This one should work. It has in the past. And in the Pitcairn Island here, you can see these are the mid-latitude storms, and Pitcairn Island area is at this time in the easterly flow around the low pressure. There's several low pressure systems in this area. And basically, it's a small low-level cloud. In these infrared pictures, the gray scale represents the temperature of the cloud, so the brighter white ones are deep clouds, and the gray ones are, in fact, just low-level cloudiness. So it tends to be cumuliform cloudiness, and this would be relatively easy to find a spot to watch the eclipse.
we get up here to the Galapagos Islands. Here's the eclipse that's coming through this area. This is the intertropical convergence zone, which has very high cloudiness levels because it's where the weather, the winds from the northern and southern hemisphere collide, and the air has no place to go but up, and so creates a lot of clouds. But this area that showed up on my mean cloud cover map is right through here along the equator, and I think it's caused by compensating downward motion in the atmosphere on each side of the ICTZ, which causes the clouds to actually dissipate. And it's a very narrow feature, but it's extremely persistent, and which is one of the main reasons why that Galapagos track is so good. Here's a loop from a second year, well, from this year, actually. And here we have a different situation, because now we see the Pitcairn Island that's actually been caught underneath one of these mid-latitude storms. And that's one of the disadvantages of that southern location, is you're right on the border between the trade winds and the southern latitude storms, and various cold fronts that come swinging through the area can get into that region and put a pretty heavy cloud cover area. But even up in here, you can see that there's still this persistent region of relatively clear skies, although the ICTZ is not very active in this particular sequence. Well, I guess I better use the right computer. Here's some pictures from Llano Island that I've grabbed off the web from various people, and this is sort of typical cloudiness every day. The frequency of clear skies that I've been able to reconstruct from ship observations is zero. There's always some little bit of cloud somewhere in the sky. And the picture up here in the top represents the kind of cloud conditions you're going to get when you're underneath one of those southern hemisphere tropospheric systems that's spread up from the south, and the rest is more typical of the... And I think many of these pictures were actually taken at the time of year of the eclipse. Looking at the weather table, my favorite numbers for these have always been the percent of possible sunshine. And these are usually measured by a glass globe that burns a track in a piece of paper. So, you know, if you don't have a burn mark, you don't have any sun. Well, if there's thin cloud, the sun will leave a burn track. I try to reconstruct from the cloud cover statistics, which are all arrived at from humans observing the sky and estimating the amount of cloud in the sky and giving it a category of clear, scattered, broken, or overcast. And I sort of give this artificial number of the probability of seeing the eclipse. And quite often, while the relative values are matched what I see in the sunshine, they're quite different in the absolute value. And that's because of there are certain biases in the way humans observe things. But the worst bias of all is that even if the sky is completely transparent but overcast with thin cloud, that's recorded as overcast. And so it appears in the fourth category, whereas it should really be in the scattered or clear category sometimes. So it'll always look worse in the clear, scattered, broken, overcast categories than the probability of seeing an eclipse, except clear, of course. And if you've got any cloud at all in the sky, it's not clear in the observation. So essentially, clear is zero, and overcast is 10, and the other two categories take up everything else. In the annular 2005, well, to nobody's surprise, the Sahara is the place to be. It's not the easy place to get to. So, you know, if you want to go to Spain, well, you want to go to the southeast corner of Spain if you can, or maybe to the island of Ibiza. You might want to drop down into Tunisia and get up along the Libyan border, or now for the Americans, at least Libya's open, might want to actually get into this part in here. And the farther you go along that track towards the Sahara, the better your cloud prospects are. Once you cross the Sahara and get into you can see the impact of the ITTZ through here, and of course you cross the Sahara through the Sudan and get into this region and through here. But even in Kenya, there's a little tongue of lower cloudiness on the north side of the eclipse track. So if that was your destination for one reason or another, you'd probably plan, at least on a climatological basis, to be on the north part. The cloud cover statistics, I have much more percent of possible sunshine here. And it sort of mirrors all of that. You can see up in the beginnings of its landfall, it's around the 40 to 50% mark. And it climbs fairly steadily till you reach maximums here in Tunisia and into. I have none of these figures for Kadami, but the prospects calculated from my artificial probability reach a maximum in here. And of course, probably higher as you get down into Sudan.
Those locations are in the news every day, and I don't think we'd really want to go there.
Yeah, there's a lot of places on the eclipse, Frank, you don't want to go. And it is a cloud. We're going to add a section in the eclipse circular about political area problems in areas you want to stay away from. Anyway, you get into Kenya, you can see that actually in Lugwar, which is in that little clear spot that I pointed out, that there's actually the highest percentage, or nearly the highest percentage of possible sunshine in there. I think that might be a little optimistic, but I suspect there's a lot of cirrus, which is actually allowing it to work. So there's some good choices in there. Here's a sort of picture of the area to give you an idea of how the cloud shapes are up over Spain and France. We've got a cold front sweeping through. A little bit of a system in Tunisia and Libya that's giving some broken, scattered clouds. And a little bit of fingers reaching up from the very moist area affected by the intercontinental or the ICPZ. These kind of cloud formations that break off and travel across the Sahara are reasonably common. It isn't an area that's completely devoid of cloud and sunny all the time. Here's a little movie just to sort of give you a feeling. These are 6-hour jumps over a 3-day period. The ground underneath keeps changing temperature as it goes from day to night. But I think you can see the Mediterranean quite easily here, and Spain up there in the corner. You see the weather system is going to sweep down. This one's going to go up that way and dissipate, but another one will come in behind it. And it's mostly just to get a feeling of the kind of way systems move that I put this thing in here. So here's a system coming up over Cyprus or Crete and dissipating in Turkey. Another flow. This is a flow of high-level moisture that's just being kicked off by thunderstorms and caught in the upper-level flow and carried up there. And it actually looks worse in these infrared pictures than it really is, because they tend to really emphasize this high-level cirrus, which may be almost semi-transparent, but looks really, really opaque. You can see how active the ICPZ is down here with all the thunderstorms that pop up in the afternoons and then die out during the day.
That's certainly something you have to contend with if you want to go down into Kenya. In March 2006, this I guess will be our favorite next target.
We have the Sahara working for us again. It's a season was not quite as sunny as the previous one. You come out of cloudiness in Brazil. You cross the ICPZ here. Now, the ICPZ is an interesting area. Winds are coming in from both sides, or more like this. And so all the air here is moist. It's coming off of the Atlantic. But all the air that's coming in from this side in here is air coming from the Sahara. So where the ICPZ is cloudy on both sides out here, it's dry on one side and cloudy on the other side. And so it makes for quite a dramatic change in the cloud cover as you go from one area to the next. And so here's the track that sort of explains why. You can see the mean position of the ITCZ, and it does wiggle around a little bit, so you have to sort of account for that in any location you want to go to. We move into from the low-pressure systems in the Sahara along the ITCZ through a little bit of a high here. There's a bit of a trough through here, and that's actually one of the favorite tracks of the little lows that come out of Europe and down the Mediterranean. They have parking places, one of them's here, one of them's here, and one of them's in this basin. And they sort of gather there, and then they scoot off to flake somebody. And then, of course, we end up in the Siberian anticyclone here, and the overnight lows in that region are still minus 26 at that time of year. That's Celsius. And once you cross the Caucasus, you can pretty much figure you're going to see some below zero temperatures. Presented possible sunshine. Some nice numbers in here. Certainly the peak in my numbers in Egypt and in Niger, but I have no data in that area for Libya, and I've actually put Siwa, Egypt, in as a representation of the track near Libya. Those look like really nice numbers given the season, because it is a relatively cloudy time of year there. And percent probabilities kind of mirror that, again, much lower. There's a lot of, especially in the Sahara, a lot of high-level cirrus cloud that doesn't completely block the sun. So it looks bad in the overcast and broken categories, but in fact, it doesn't affect the sunshine recorded quite so much. Haze is a bit of a problem. This is satellite observations of an aerosol index, and it's just a relative measure. It hasn't got a physical connection with the actual particulate matter. This shows high-level haze. And the Sahara, the main regions of generation of the dust in the Sahara are kind of in here, and they get caught up in this flow going into the ICCZ and lifted high in the atmosphere. And so you get this high-level haze that's persistent in there. But this area, which gets its share of dust storms, they tend to stay down at the surface, so they don't appear in this satellite imagery. Here's a picture of one of these demons generating as a result of winds and some thunderstorm convection in the middle of the Sahara. That's Lake Chad there in the lower left. So I put this chart of visibility problems, you know, frequency of various kinds of visibility restrictions. And southwest coast of Africa, where it first comes to shore, you can see some areas have a lot of high-level stuff. But this is stuff that's going to, you're going to see through it for the most part. There's no heavy dust storms that are really going to stop you from seeing the sun. In contrast, when you get into Saloum, Egypt, we've got some, and through Zinder in Niger, which is close to the generation zone, we start to see some higher numbers. And in fact, around Saloum is one of the maxima in the frequency of dust. But having said that, to get visibilities of below 1 kilometer, or maybe say 2 kilometers, where it really starts to bother you, they're less than 1% of the time. So it's still a relatively low probability. Once you get off of the African coast, it drops to zero. There's a little bit of an infarctus here, which I think might be due more to local effects. What's interesting, of course, fog is on the coast, and fog is a real big problem. These are observations at eclipse time. They're not fog any time during the day. Smoke and haze changes. Now you start to see the high-level stuff in here and a little bit in Turkey. And just in case you're inclined to go way down the track, there's also occasional blowing snow. So all of these things are different problems that can create visibility restrictions, but probably not stop you from seeing the eclipse for the most part. Here's a picture of the Mediterranean just taken from late April this year. And here's a low-pressure system that's crossing just past Spain here, cold front down through here, big warm front through this area, and a plume of dust being carried right across the Mediterranean and into the keel of Italy. And this flow, of course, will move. Lots of southerly winds and southwesterly winds as it gets into the eclipse area over in here. It's going to carry dust out of the desert and into that region. And they're easy to see coming days ahead of time if you just watch these satellite images. Dust is best seen in the morning images because it's a forward scatterer, so the light reflects off of it and scattered into the optics of the satellite. And then as you get up past the Black Sea, you know, these are all going to cause small to large amounts of cloud depending on just how the development along the warm front actually proceeds. They're very dynamic, so they can be quiet one day and really going the next day. Here's another one of these images. This is a different season now. I guess it started and I just shut it off. Well, there we go. Okay, speak to me over the computer. Okay, here we got a nice little low pressure system up here in proceeding across the Mediterranean. That kind of comma shape is typical. This is jet stream cirrus going across here. This kind of hooked back to that edge means it's interacting with the system in front and developing, and you can watch that. These are tough to follow because the land is continually changing, it's shaved underneath. The IPCZ is feeding a little bit of high-level moisture in here, but for the most part, the Sahara is quiet, and it's a Mediterranean area, which is dynamic, which is one of the reasons why I like locations for this eclipse that are deep in the desert, where you're away from this dynamic, high-moisture disturbances that travel along the North African coast and get moisture from the Mediterranean. This is probably going to be the region where most of us go. Saloum in Egypt here, perhaps down this road out of Europe, or another road from the other side that goes much deeper into the desert to a place called Jalu. I did a scouting trip there. Here's a picture. This is Saloum there in the middle left, the little white buildings. That's a piece of the Libyan plateau, and the border between Egypt and Libya is up on the top of that plateau. You can see that haziness in the sky, which is always there when you're this close to the Sahara. So it's a beautiful bay. Probably be a very nice location, especially if we can get permission from the military to be up on the top of the plateau. I don't see why it wouldn't. This is the infamous Saloum or Habub. Rare. Think of it as a great photographic opportunity. And cover your cameras all the time. Mediterranean Turkey. Here's the sky color there, although it wasn't quite the same season. I'm looking inland from, and you see there's a flat coastal plain, so it's actually pretty good if the winds are coming in off the water, because they won't start to lift dramatically till they hit the mountains, so there'll be a lower cloud cover in this part of Antalya, around Antalya, than there is if you go further inland into Turkey. And of course, as you go further inland, you hit much more dynamic conditions too, so the cloud cover increases pretty steadily. 2008.
I was tempted to go home and see this one, but it's not very good cloud cover. I used to live up there. I don't think I'm going to go back. Anyway, it's all in the map here. I mean, the best weather conditions are right in here, you know, superhighway, it's all converging into this.
I'd like to go back to Mongolia again. Novosibirsk, of course, is up in here, so there's a road that kind of runs down in that way, but I suspect that the sort of northern or northwestern part of China might be a place to go if we can find enough. Otherwise, you pick your poison kind of thing. You've got a kind of a low sun if you get down into here, so might want to trade off a little higher sun. This is where difficult decisions have to be made. How many people can get in there and what kind of accommodation? It's a long way from anywhere, but, you know, we all have aircraft these days. And I know Fred's mentioned a trip up to Novaya Zemlya, or however it's pronounced, up here, on that nice little Russian icebreaker. That could be quite an adventure. Here's just a picture grabbed off the web at the right time. It sort of shows the dynamism. Had a little bit of a weather system here, another one here. All of this stuff is not weather. This is just cold air sitting on top of the Himalayan mountains. So it's sort of the usual stuff we're used to, you know, cloudy one day, clear the next, and that's where the cloudiness comes from. It's not an area where you've got a lot of mobility if you go into northern China, so you kind of have to pick it on the basis of climatology. I put these tables together recently, present a possible sunshine. This is why I don't want to stay home. And Novosibirsk gets up over half, and this place in Mongolia, which is a little bit to the east of where the track goes, reasonably high, and here we are, this place in China. Around Lanzhou, I think, is probably the best place, just a little bit south of the Altai Mountains along the Mongolia-China border. The last one we're going to look at. Everybody wants to go to Bhutan, right in here.
years ago I wrote, the first rule in eclipse chasing is be there on the right day at the right time. The second rule is to stay out of mountains.
Most things I haven't figured them out. So, again, Frank says it all. Best areas right in here, or maybe out in the water a little bit. And this is Shanghai and Guangzhou right here. So,
you and 50 million other people can stand in the streets and watch it. And
I don't know about water. And there's some small Japanese islands in here that it crosses. Boy, are they in for a shock. And, you know, once you get out of the mid-ocean, it's kind of a wide thing. You don't get much in any weather advantage. You get a little bit because of mobility, but most ships aren't that mobile. What I do find interesting in the blow-up here is that area of blue that goes through northern India and through the top of Bangladesh. And that's actually just south of the mountains, and it is actually an area of lower cloud cover. And satellite picture here kind of shows things. This is the monsoon season. That's why it's so cloudy. Lots of flow of air coming up in here, loaded with moisture. Thunderstorms forming here. All of India is cloudy at this time. It breaks up. We got a lot of holes in here because now we're getting into moving weather systems instead of stationary thunderstorm development. But some of them are pretty big because there's still lots of moisture feeding up. And for those who are thinking about shipboard, this is remains of a typhoon here. This looks like a new morning.
We are in the beginning of the typhoon season, so you have to keep those in mind, especially if you're taking a tour of 200 people there, and they're going to blame you if it goes wrong for the ship.
Weather table here. Pretty bad number. This is in that little bit of a dry area in northern India that I pointed out to you on the cloud cover map. It actually just about doubles the probability of seeing the eclipses as other parts of India. Getting to China is relatively uniform, and the number in Shanghai, Guangzhou, they're not a lot better than anybody else. They're better than the worst places, but they're not much better than the second best places. And so, somewhere in here, these are Japanese sites that straddle the islands that are offshore, so they're about the same. And so if you wanted to go on the basis of weather, you'd head toward the end of that track in the Guangzhou and Shanghai area.
So, there it is. Your next 5 years of holidays.
These are my recommendations from what I know at this stage. I put in Novosibirsk because I think this might be the second best choice, just because it's a little easier to get there. It's a big city.
And, if you're mobile, some of them you might be able to overcome, but some of these are, there's just not much you can do. You got to go there and take whatever Mother Nature throws at you. So, there's my email if you want to talk to me.
And some of these maps for 08 and 09 aren't on the web yet, but I'll throw them up there if you want to get them. And you can start dreaming about 4 or 5 years down the line. Thank you very much.
Gives us an awful lot to think about for the next few years. Anybody have any questions for Jay?
Yes, these big cities at the coast of China for 2009, I understand that at the moment they have terrible air pollution. Is this a real factor? Can you see this actually from satellite data?
Oh yeah, I can see those. But just think of it, you just need a thinner filter. I know a lot of you will have specific questions about specific areas, so if you just want to talk to me quietly on the side when it's all done, and if I need to go back and look at some of the data and pick up specific places for you, just send me an email. It takes only about 10 or 15 minutes to look at a couple of cities and get them.
For the solar eclipse, at all times, do you see some inconvenience with the climate change?
When they asked me that, at work. I say, wait 30 years and I'll let you know. But of course, can't hear, because that's the problem with these sorts of things. There are definitely impacts of climate change, but and they won't be reflected in this data, which is mostly gathered between about 1970 and 1993. So, yes, there are impacts there, but I don't know what they are, because we need an updated database where we can compare it with an older one. And I'm actually thinking of doing that. I'm retiring next year, so I'll be able to devote my entire life to this. But I would think there'd be more concern in a lot of them is whether there's an El Nino or not. That would be the major change on, for instance, next year's eclipse in Galapagos, because an El Nino is going to make that area more cloudy than it typically is. It's going to have the opposite, I think, impact in Pitcairn. It's kind of in the middle. You know, Australia gets drier. Pitcairn, maybe it just sits in the middle. So the first thing I would be concerned about is, at least in the central latitudes of an El Nino. And they do have impacts on the strength of the monsoon as well, a little bit, although it's sort of the following year. So they're difficult to break apart. Dinner?
Thank you, Ken. I think Larry Jones is going to have some announcement here for us.